Good morning and welcome. It is good to be here, to be together, to worship. It's always good to look at the story. I don't know how, if you say just good, it's hard and yet good to look at the story of Jesus and walking, taking that today. So I'm going to shift back here, but this week was Valentine's Day, and how many of you were blessed in a coming or going through Valentine's Day, something special? One person. Okay, so we had two people, three people, four people, five people. Okay, we had a few people blessed through that. Now, it is interesting. Let's go back just a little bit, and I did say something that it would be peaceful if the ladies weren't here. That I wouldn't joke about that if that's how I would feel. Think about this. What would Valentine's Day be like if God never brought woman into the world? Like, for real. Like, there's a lot of things. And when I say relationship, I don't mean just husband and wife, but there's a lot of things a woman brings into the world, especially relationally, and just a beauty extra. Like, what would Valentine's Day be like if there was no women? Like, you know, but it's funny because there's actually... Like that would be not funny. I mean, as far as, I don't mean homosexual, I just mean there'd be so much missing. But there is quite a lot we learn. Did God take something away from man? We know he took a rib, but like in all of creation, it's the thing that he added was woman. But did he take something away from man? We could, as men, feel a little victimized here that he took something from us. No. I mean, I think he did, but to give us something much more. Took a rib. But there's something about relationship that we learn in life, even just family. I mean, woman, man, there's just a lot. So who knows you best? And I'm not, it can be a husband and wife, but all of us here have people that know us probably as good as anybody. And sometimes that's different ages of our life. Like when we're younger, that may be our mom or dad. Then it may be our sibling. It may be a partner. It may still be family. Even when you're married, sometimes there's places people understand you. Relationship and knowing. So there's one thing when Jesus was here, and I thought about that even in that story. Like the people Jesus had just been, in our Sunday school lesson, the people that Jesus had just been spending a lot of time with were the disciples. Like that would have to be some of the weight of why Judas did what he did when he actually realized what all was happening. He knew Jesus. He knew him closely. And last year we had a friend, a guy that worked for us, took his life. And you know, one day he was at work, and the next day he was gone, and we had been talking. And there is a hope that in those last moments that there was a true repentance. There is hope in that. But if he didn't, there is no hope. And like, I don't know how that all, just suicide. When Jesus was here, he was asked a question. And I often think of this question a little more kind of legally, and it may be because I'm a man, and maybe a woman hears the question differently, but he was asked this question to test him. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" This is in Matthew 22. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." And the thing that's kind of interesting about this question, but if you, the person that knows you the best, were asked, what does that person want the most? What is the greatest to that person? So this isn't just a legal law question. This is actually a relational question too. So Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And that's like a great, like it just encompasses so much. So how do you grab a hold of something that's that big? The second is like the first, love your neighbor as yourself. This is a paraphrase. Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and intelligence. But if you answer, just get somebody in mind that you're very close to, what do they want the most? What expresses love to them the most? For me right now, that would be Sheeran. And I still don't always know. Like, I still miss Sheeran as far as life keeps changing, there's curves. But there is a knowing. Jesus knew Father, and he said this is the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. There's a lot of do's and don'ts in the law. This one's a do. This is a do. And in the doing, it takes care of a lot of don'ts. Same as in the relationship, like we can do big things for each other, like at Valentine's Day or other times of the year. I think all of us would trade a few big things for a regular, close relationship. And it takes tending. And I want to look at two words today, and it's tending and worship. And tending is just doing the little things, taking care, paying attention, keep doing, continuing on, tending to. And everyone here is in relationship, many relationships. There's relationships this way. We have a relationship with Father. There's so many relationships. Relationships take tending. And the other one is worship. The one part of tending that I do want to think about is just keeping a fire, tending a fire. So how many of you like sitting by a fire? And it is a place to warm, to fellowship. But a good fire is a good thing. But how do you tend a fire? You put wood on it, you know, do you come back to it after it burns out? If you're going to tend a fire ongoing, it's a lot of small wood that keeps going, that keeps a wood, a steady wood. It continues. So I want you to think about this and think about this personally. But so this whole thing of loving God, well, it's just this big thing. I'd like to, let's just get it down to just your heart. Does your heart have fire for the Lord? Is it actually tended? Is your heart have fire? Does your heart, is it warm and hot for God? W.E. Sangster of Westminster Central Hall was once a member of a group responsible for interviewing applicants for the Methodist ministry. A rather nervous young man presented himself before the group. The candidate said he felt he ought to explain that he was rather shy and was not the sort of person who would ever set the Thames River on fire, that is, create much of a stir in the city. My dear young brother responded, Sangster, with insightful wit and wisdom, I'm not interested to know if you can set the Thames on fire. What I want to know is this: if I picked you up by the scruff of your neck and dropped you into the Thames, would it sizzle? But if the condition of my heart or the hotness of your heart, your life, right now were dropped into a river, would it sizzle? Would it be hot? And we could say that's a feeling. No, it's not. It's a condition. It's something that we tend to. It's our responsibility. It's same as in a relationship. Relationship is so much more than just feeling. So if just personally, if you were dropped into a river, would your heart, would your heart sizzle? Spirit-filled souls are ablaze for God. They love with a love that glows. They serve with a faith that's kind. They serve with a devotion that consumes. They hate sin with a fierceness that burns. They rejoice with a joy that radiates. Love is perfected in the fire of God. Samuel Chadwick. John Wesley. My fear is not that our great movement, and he was talking about a church revival, will eventually cease to exist one day or die. My fear is that our people will become content to live life without the fire, the power, the excitement, and the supernatural filling of God that makes us great. But those are things. What does it take? What does it take in your life to tend fire in your heart? What all does it take? And just like any marriage relationship is a curve. It's not like you just get a manual and you do this and it works. It's an ongoing thing, an ongoing learning. But that's our journey with God. Jesus said the greatest commandment is know him. Love him with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Worship. Going to look at Webster's a little bit. And Webster's, when it comes to the word worship, it's kind of a hit miss. Like, for real, it's not, I'm good to look at it. The reverent love and devotion according a deity, an idol, or a sacred object. That would be one definition. The ceremonies, prayer, or other religious forms by which this love is expressed. Worship. To honor or show reverence for a divine being or supernatural power. Worship, to regard with great or extravagant respect, honor, or devotion. The Hebrew word for worship, and there's about 7, 8, 9, 10, but there's two basic, is shasha. Some of you guys know this stuff better than I do. I'll say it. I'm willing to be stupid to, like, hopefully you get sha, S-C-H-A, C-H, S-H-A, C-H-A-H, sha, cha. So it's almost like cha-cha, but it's sha-cha. That's the biggest word for worship, and it means to depress, to bow down or fall down flat. How many of us like to be depressed? We don't like to be depressed. This is different. This is pressing down willingly. Sha, cha. Sha cha is spelled Sheen Chet Hay. Sheen is the picture of teeth and can mean to consume, destroy, or press. It is the one letter God uses to identify himself. So it's teeth. But it is the position God deserves. Chet, part of that word is Chet. It is a picture of protection or refuge the sanctuary or the inner room. Hey is a picture of outstretched arms and means to behold, to look up, or pay attention to what follows. So you get this idea of pressing down, but close attention, but inner. So somewhere in that word of coming and pressing down and drawing in, there's this idea of outstretched hands and protection and in. Sha-cha. Pressed down, bowed down. He draws us close to him in his inner sanctuary. Close to him, us pressed down. His place, the Lord. Our place, again, surrender. Jesus said, the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. And he knew his Father. So there's a state here of humility, about the furthest you can get from cha-cha is pride. It's about as far as you can get from this state of walking as pride. And that's why God hates pride. Submission, recognizing the right to give orders, to let him have his goals and purposes accomplished in our lives. And there is a physical response, and often in our society, we miss a bit of that, is the bowing down, the physical bowing down. But often it helps us remember the inner bowing down when there's a physical bowing down. Those are Hebrew words. Barak, to kneel down, to bow, give reverence, implies a continual, conscious giving place to God. There's about 9 or 10 other, there's maybe seven, eight. One is halal, and to praise, to celebrate, and that's much more of an expressive one. Has to do with worship, glory, sing, be boastful, spirit of praise, spirit of exuberance, tahia, zamar, yaha, song, music. And Exodus 20, when God was giving the children of Israel instructions about how to walk with him, and this is Exodus 20, verse 2, and God spoke all these words saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And for them it was Egypt. For us it's sin. For God delivered us from bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. So that's a priority. That's just a place. That's God wants his place in our lives. No other before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Jesus' new Father, Jesus, even in the garden, he asked, you know, take the cup. But he said, Father, not my will, but thine be done. He knows Father. He knows God wants his place. And he wants, he it's a relationship, it's a love, it's a place, but no competing. When grace changes the heart, submission out of fear changes to submission out of love. Both submission. When grace changes the heart, submission out of fear changes to submission out of love, but it's God, his place. True humility is born. I'm going to look ahead. I had a few more men here to look at. I'm going to look at one or two and then go to kind of the last part of the message. What does tending mean? What does tending mean for you? Tending worship. And like, if you related to your wife exactly the way you relate to God, or vice versa, do we get into a place where we go through the motions without much actually? It's not just emotions. The Word of God says obedience. Like, if you want to love God, obey Him. But it's also more than, it's a relationship, it's tending. In Noah's day, there's a few things that we can see in Noah that would reveal the tending and the worship. And this is Genesis 6. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. God said to Noah, this is verse 13, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. I think the one thing, if we would have been there, Noah was faithful. Many days. We don't know how many days he actually built the ark. Was it from 120 to 600? It says he was 120, I think, when he started, but then, he was almost 600. We don't know how long, if he built for how many years. But there's something about in Noah's day that everybody around him was going that way, and Noah was walking with God. Noah walked with God. Noah. On and on. That's what he did. He walked with God. God talked to Noah. God told him what to do. And you can look verse 22 and 6, verse 7, 5, and the same thing, like it says, thus Noah did. Thus Noah did. According to all that God had commanded him, so he did. 7:5, and Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded. After the flood, and I think this is, you can go through the Old Testament, and this is the one thing that will keep standing out with these men that God used. Noah went in the ark. There was a lot of people. There had never been rain until those last bit, as far as those last month or whatever that was. And Noah came out. The earth was different. People were gone. And again, the first thing Noah did was build an altar. But I don't think it was just something he added. I think it's how Noah was living. Noah worshiped. Noah obeyed. Noah worshiped. The world did what the world does, not Noah. Noah did what God wanted. But it was so many days. I think that's the thing, the tending. Noah walked with God. Noah walked with God. do just real quickly one thing about Abraham. He went without knowing. When he would get somewhere, he would build an altar. He would build an altar. He would build an altar. I don't care what age you are. I don't care, young or old. We need to keep our altar of worship to God clear. It God's position in our life. Nothing between what God asks, what God says. The other place is when he took Isaac up the mountain after he had waited so long for his promised son and seed and heir. And it said, take him up and put, and to him it was probably all. Like that was probably what to him, but he again, and it said, we're going up to worship. The word there in the King James is worship. And he was going to sacrifice his son. That's, you want to look at the cost of faith and the willingness and the place they had God in their lives. Look at what they were willing to do. Moses, young, palace, old, shepherd, couldn't speak. In Hebrews, it says that Moses kept his eye on the invisible God, to the one you can't see. That's what Moses kept his eye on, to God. That's worship. Moses kept his eye on the invisible God that you could not see. We know that he didn't go into the promised land, but was he perfect? No. But that's what's written in Hebrews. Moses kept his eye on the invisible God. That's tending. That's continuing. It's on. It's giving God his place. Daniel, from youth, he was not willing to let go of his God. He kept his God through Babylonian kingdom, through the Medes, through the Persians, like away from home. And you, as Daniel got old, you could read how much he prayed. You can read how much he sought, how much he fasted. You can go there in the middle, and it's just, again, the same thing. When the instruction was given not to open his window and pray, Daniel did what Daniel did. It didn't matter what the world said. It didn't matter the consequences. He worshiped his God. He prayed to his God. Let everything else. He took the consequences. He was in, but he had God in his place, because that's where Daniel lived, with God in the place that God deserved. It was probably 2 weeks ago. Had a patchy, rough week. And Dad was in the hospital. It's like good stuff out of that. There was something that happened at work. It was quite a bit of money involved. Something that happened with one of our daughters. And you get to the end of a week and you're just carrying this thing. And then we had a goat born on a Saturday. I was out doing some chores and little goat. And the stupid mom wouldn't take care of the little baby goat. Like, what mom doesn't care for a baby goat? Wouldn't pay attention to it. And Jess, like, grabs the thing, takes it in, and that was Sunday, you know, and a day later, like, there's this connection, and then the goat dies, and it's like, God, why do you let the goat live? And in those places, I realized where my worship was, and, like, it was time to stand at a different place and let God be who God is in my life. Not, he is not there just to keep us happy. He is God. He cares for us. We may not understand all things. So there's this movement of our hearts to keep putting God in his place. And there's work involved with it. That's what you call tending. But it's not circumstances. It's living in faith to God. It's loving God, worshiping God. Going to just run through a few of these pretty quickly. Worship puts our focus at the right place. So if you're focusing on circumstances, if you're focusing on problems, if you're focusing on trials, if I am, wrong focus. It is. God wants us to have him focus and let these be where they are. God is over. When we face obstacles or hard things, the action is to remember God's greatness. The action is to trust his provision. That's a big deal. I don't care if you're 5. I don't care if you're 10. I don't care if you're 20 or 25 or 30 or 50 or 70 or 80. Trust God's provision. God provides. What God has for us, God has good. Sometimes we don't see. Trust, but it's move your heart to trust. Trust God's greatness. Worship satisfies our soul. Sometimes it's time to just come and worship and set God again. If he's not there, it's to live clearly with God in his place. Worry wearies our soul. Anger eats our lunch. Anger's often rooted in unsatisfied goals. We have to choose what we do with disappointments. Choosing to give God his place. Choosing to let God be in his place. Jesus would draw away to be with his Father. David would go sanctuary. He'd go to the wilderness. Do I spend time bowed down before my Father? Worship grows our faith. It's interesting that our time on earth is really the only time we need faith. That's kind of interesting. Like, faith is this season. There'll be another place where belief will be present. Like, it's faith will be behind us in that way. But in this season, we need faith. Worship and faith are tied. The more our faith is stretched and the more it's used, the more it grows. And yet we don't like when our faith is stretched. Worshiping God is recognizing his position, but also remembering what he's brought us through so many times and so many ways and days and faith is what made David run toward the giant while everybody ran the other way. David remembered what God had done, and David ran toward. He went to the giant, and he stood on his faith. He stood on what he knew God could do, and in that, God acted. But worship, faith, Faith is remembering and standing on what God can do and will do. And worship. Awake, intentional worship. Worship does bring us closer to God. Sometimes it's just drawing, living in a position, knowing where He is, knowing nothing is too big. And again, name the situation. Is God greater? There's not situations. When do situations tend to change? It's when we change, when we bow, when we give God His place and we rest in His place. About 2 weeks ago, my first cousin was married to a leader, a pastor leader in Kansas, and they stood on faith healing, like extreme. And he got cancer, and they denied that he even had cancer. And it went all the way down, and like it was all hush. And this is a large, like this is an influential man. And he died like that. And my uncle, his wife had died, and the church had stood on it that if everybody has faith, he can be healed, she can be healed. But it was kind of interesting. My uncle, he's 87, and he said there's such a big difference, and these were his people. He said there's such a big difference between asking God for healing and demanding God for healing. And he said, like, believing He can do it is one thing, but like, let God be God. Let God be who God is. God can heal when he chooses to heal. Worship makes us thankful. It is impossible to be thankful and full of worry at the same time. And like, sometimes we try to do that. Sometimes we try to be thankful and full of worry. Like, it's usually a pretty good idea to step back and understand what actually is going on and choose to recognize God. Worry is doubting God. Choices in that. Worry is a choice. Thankfulness is a choice. We've had different friends walk through pretty intense grief, and we've went through some. And the one thing that's usually, there's people here that can talk about grief a whole different level than I can. So I'm not, but grief does come in waves. Grief does come in waves. Sometimes they're overwhelming waves that take you under, spit you out. Just like at the ocean, when you get into big waves and lose, grief can do that. Grief often, with time, the waves become less, but you'll still get some waves that are very big, very powerful. But grief tends to be like waves. What we do in life with waves that overwhelm us often have as much to do when Jesus said, the first and greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But even when the waves in life are bigger than us, like what we do in those moments, what we do in those times, the actions we take to get our feet on the ground, and to come let God carry us and not just become bitter. But those times of big waves are what we choose to do. They define our life. Worship means we're letting go of why. That's our favorite one, letting go of why. We all like to let go of why. None of us like to let go of why. We all want to know why. We can worship without letting go of why. We can have faith, but really, in a beautiful way, truly letting God have his place, truly letting go into his hands, there's a maturity and a beauty that comes with not having to know why about everything. It's letting, trusting God. There's a beauty, a fullness, a maturity, and that's hard to do, to not have to know why God is letting something, why God is taking you through something. We like plans, we like control. God tells us his ways are higher than ours. God tells us his thoughts are higher than ours. And if we can let it be that, that he knows. It's been joked about the first time I truly, deeply, deeply submitted to God, I think I heard something break. It was my will. You know, part of knowing God, part of loving God, is that there's a breaking of my will. It's letting go of my thing, my stuff, my. The first time I truly, deeply submitted to God, I think I heard something break. I think it was my will. And that is a good kind of breaking, not easy, but good, and it is worship. Not waving a white flag, saying to God, I give up, but it's realizing God is God, and he is trustworthy. He doesn't change. He is the potter, we are the clay. Worship is the best warfare against the enemy. It has been, and it will continue to be. When the enemy, Lucifer, was not always that. He was one, he was a beautiful, and he was high. When he tried to take glory that was God, God cast him out of heaven. There'll always be a struggle for glory and worship. The enemy, that's what he is against. He'll always be. So when we choose to worship, when we choose to declare, stand, declare, praise, that's always going to be some of our best warfare for you, for yours, for your family, for those around you. Stand and declare the name of the Lord. The one thing about worship is God is always worthy of worship. It's so basic. When stuff is working out good, when prayers are being answered, when there's fruit, there's abundance, it is easy or easier to worship God in abundance. Is God worthy because he's doing what we want? No, God is always good. It's his character. God will not be anything but good. Worship is not dependent on answers. Worship is powerful simply because God is worthy. God doesn't break promises. Like, he doesn't break promises. His promises are good. Tending worship, action, you know, it's tending the fire. It's a lot of little things. It's when things come in and God loses his clear place. It's keeping that clear place. It's continuing to do, to let God be there clearly. I think that's it. Maybe we'll just